What is happening? Welcome to another episode of the Craft of Pitching podcast. My name is Nick Pollock, and I'm so fortunate today because I don't know how I got him here, but we have a special guest, Eino Saris, today. Eino, great to see you.
Good to see you too.
Yeah, you're a hard man to reach. I got to say, I got to leave 20 voicemails, and I got to talk to some agent over here. Someone says you're on this. It's unbelievable, but and it's great to have
you. How many hours a day do you stream?
Too many. That is a weird thing that I do, but it's great. I get to build with the community on playback.tv/pitcherlist and be able to get my work done as I stream. So
I'm getting used to it too. I'll be podcasting daily through the playoffs for Raids and Barrels. And I've been sort of transitioning from a writer who podcasts to a podcaster who writes.
Oh my gosh. Oh no. That is the death of the craft. I'm just kidding. And this is the craft. Yeah. Oh my gosh. No. So I've seen that a little bit myself, is like, okay, I used to write all these things more, and then now I'm doing it like this. But having a merge of the two and being able to really share those deep thoughts and the articles that you put out, Eino, are fantastic. And we can't lose those in the slightest, please. Never lose a written word. Today, we have a couple things we got to talk about, and Eino has a great idea of just kind of looking back at what we were thinking in the preseason, what actually played out, and where we were wrong, essentially, of just, hey, look, we were thinking this kind of thing. This is what happened differently. Is that something we can learn from? But before we even get to that, Eino, before we do, I have a question. I put this out on Twitter, and I feel like this is not discussed enough. Where should Jacob deGrom be drafted next year?
I struggled with this 2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember Jordan putting out a whole thing about it.
And because he was very obviously per inning the best projected pitcher that we had. And, you know, I also think of Tyler Glasnow. So the funny thing about Tyler Glasnow, I think, is that both sides were right this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the side that said, oh, he's not going to pitch a lot of innings. Well, you know, both sides are right and wrong. They said he's not going to pitch a lot of innings. Well, he didn't, but he did pitch, I think, the most of his career or second most of his career. So,
yeah, I think it was the most.
Yeah. The most of his career. Yeah. So they were right and wrong.
Right.
The people that said, well, he'll be so good when he's in that he'll still be worthwhile, were right too. Because let me see what I think. I have it all here. Glasnow was the 16th ranked pitcher at the end of the year. So that's a win, actually, because if you think about all the pitchers that have taken in the first, you know, the first 10, not a lot of them ended up even 16th. You know,
That is the lesson, I think, learned, really. I mean, we try and learn it every single year, but I think it just gets amplified every single season of just, it's a complete crapshoot, I think, for figuring out the starters that stick around inside the top 100 overall.
Right. So, I mean, you can still take, there's still two pathways in the dark where you say, okay, but if you have any sort of whiff of injury, then I'm not in, you know, and I just want to try and get innings. I understand that. You know, we don't know how much of a TJ honeymoon there is, but he looks like he's healthy now. And, you know, to me, the question is, can he throw 130 innings next year? I think the answer is yes.
DeGrom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if he can throw 130 innings, then he's going to be better than 16th because he's better than Glasnow.
Yep.
So, but then, you know, what if you do pick him, and especially if he's like head to head? Right. And you do pick him and you go through the whole season and then you just don't have your best pitcher at the end of the season because whatever. And it doesn't always have to be an elbow. Like Glasnow, it's been backs and hamstrings and all sorts of stuff.
I just won my year picking Strider 12th overall.
Yeah, right. So you could still
happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only time I've ever done this. I was like, I'm going to do this once. Fine. All right.
Like, what do you do? Two stars.
Okay. I've learned it. All right. I get it. Never.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what will happen is that I won't have him because I would love to take him 16th and get 16th. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, I would love to. I'd love to take him in the third or fourth round. And, you know, I'd love for everyone else to freak out about Risk. And then I'm like, well, actually here he's good. Sure. I'd love to take him where I had some shares of Tyler Glasnow this year. I'd love to take him where I took Tyler Glasnow. Mm-hmm. But he won't. He'll go in the first. And so I think I'll probably be out.
Really?
So my answer is he should not be drafted first.
Okay. So, I'm in agreement with you. I think it's kind of
Zach Wheeler is really good and he pitches a lot of innings, and you know what I mean?
It's like, I don't think I'm going to have Jacob DeGrom as number one. I've certainly I understand the argument,
but where do you put him is then impossible.
Oh my gosh. I'm putting out my top 200 in a week. At least that's the goal. I always say this every year. I'm like, no, I'm going to do it right away. But I'm actually going to spend Monday and Tuesday. You're talking about me. How much do I live stream? I'm literally just the entire day. I'm like, everybody ignore me. This is the last thing I need to do to wipe my hand clean of the season.
No more stream.
Is done. Yeah. Actually, no. I do a stream of every single team as I've reviewed every pitching staff for 2025.
Okay.
I mean, I got to figure out how to make this work the year round. And this is the way. I got to be that guy. Can't be him in March. Yeah. I don't put in the work in the off season. Okay.
That's right.
The ebbs don't arrive in June. Okay. So they aren't made in June. They're made in the winter. So Monday and Tuesday, I'm spending Monday's me just making the rank, and then Tuesday's me just writing all the notes about all the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'll be doing every single team through the offseason, writing a by team article, just assessment of everyone. And as of now, I don't have DeGrom at one. I think he's in my top five, though.
Where do you put the top pound for pound guy that may not give you a lot of pounds? I mean, it's and then what if he just does throw 150 innings next year? Then he'll be number one easily. So it's so hard.
I think the biggest.
Who are the other guys?
I want to call this episode the starting pitching lessons of 2024. It's kind of what I want this podcast to be, right? And for me, one of the lessons that I've learned, I mean, I think it's so easy in the off season to look back and see one number and just say, this is who that guy was.
Mm-hmm.
And to not really reflect on what it's like being a fantasy manager and understanding what actual value is, despite what your brain says, your emotions and heart say something different in season. When it's May 15th and DeGrom isn't hurt, you know, it's like, well, all right, DeGrom is SP number one.
Yeah.
And look, I saw all of these pitchers get injured. I'm looking right now at my top 100 that I put out on March 28th, right before the season started.
Yeah, I had to take injured guys out because I was just like, you know.
Yeah,
what do I learn from them? Guys get injured.
I guess I had my injury table at this point. I must have. But I do. Oh my gosh. I had DeGrom out and Cole out and McClanahan out and Alcantara and Woodruff, Bueller, Bradish, Yuri Perez was hurt at this point. Senga, Bryant. I mean, oh my gosh, that injury table was so bad at the beginning of the year. But that's the thing, is that everyone can get hurt so quickly out of nowhere. And I mean, I remember being really in on Kyle Bradish and just, well, never mind, get out of here. Garrett Cole, the stability guy, hurt. There's so much that goes into it that we don't care about the injury history May 1st anymore. We're just completely gone from it, right? And I think that I'm going to be a lot more aggressive on injury knock guys, not the ones who are already hurt, just the ones that we are lower on. Chris Sale. What? That was the whole thing. There's no way he does whatever. He's gone every single start. I mean, what? He's gone 29 starts this year. Phenomenal, right? And sure, he's an exception in this way. But it's, I think, a showcase of, as you're saying, Tyler Glasnow, that was great. You got 130 innings. It was awesome. I'm going to be aggressive on Jacob DeGrom for this reason. And I don't know that Paul Skenes is a safe bet. Like, look at Strider. He's a good example of, you think that all of a sudden this hard thrower just is for a year and has clearly set up himself as SP number one. Well, Skenes, no Tommy John, I don't believe on record. I'm aware of. I could be very wrong on that. But is he okay? I mean, I remember your chart of the top 10 velocity guys and all of them got hurt this year. Was there one that wasn't? Hunter Green? No, he did. Never mind. All of them gone. The greatest prophecy of the 2024 season. Enosaurus's velocity chart.
Really undefeated. You know?
So, I mean, so for me, it's like Skeens and Scooble and Nola and Wheeler. And if you had to add a fifth guy, who would that be?
DeGrom.
No. DeGrom and Wheeler is 3-4 there, or whatever.
DeGrom, Wheeler.
There's
Wheeler's.
A fifth one. I think there's a definitive number five.
Burns' cutter is like, you know.
It's better. It's better. I told you in San Francisco. Look at it. The drop. It's back.
But it's gone and come. Like, it's come and gone this year. Like, it's he's not.
Well, been, right. No, he lost it been, for months. And then now it's like.
He's not vintage Burns, but I would be tempted to put Burns there just because I feel like he's like a little bit of a Wheeler where it's just like, it's good. Mm. It's a lot, you know, a lot of innings every year. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to put Garrett Crochet there.
Mm.
I mean, I understand the whole wins thing, but is he going to be on the White Sox next year?
Yeah. It's be interesting because he's easier to trade in the offseason.
Yeah.
Because the other team can now manage his innings all year.
Right. And like the reason he was going to get dealt, but then wasn't, it was because of the whole playoff thing. Hey, I'm not going to pitch unless you give me a contract. Right. So hopefully you'll be able to deal now. But thank you for entertaining the DeGrom thing. I think the question of skill that people have suggested for a 37-year-old at this point, I don't think that's in question. Honestly, if you've seen him pitch at all this for his two games, like he looks like classic DeGrom.
And
it's pretty insane.
One thing that also is important is, and I actually don't know how to apply this to somebody like Tyler Mahle, but one thing that I really like is that he's come back and he's pitched.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
And even if, you know, his stuff has gone from, you know, 3 standard deviations above, you know, everybody else's to 2.5 standard deviations, he's demonstrated he has the stuff.
Right.
And exactly. Even if his velo has gone from, you know, sitting 99 to sitting 97, like 97 is still pretty good. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, one of the things that happens sometimes is they put away the slider when they are rehabbing from Tommy John, and happy to see him come back and throw the slider a bunch. So, you know, I think he's going to be all set for a really great season. At 36, too, he's not into that Scherzer-Verlander territory yet.
Yeah. So DeGrom, in that second game, it was sitting 97, 98. And his PLV, so if you guys know PLV for like four-seamers, generally you want to get at 5 or above, kind of like how you want to be a little, you know, you're slightly maybe underneath.
Yeah, what do you have?
Plus 607.
That's like, you never.
That is that, absurd. Right? Like, yeah. The best four seamer I normally see is like a 5.4. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. 607. You don't see 6. You don't see 6 anything, really. Like, Brandt Herter's sinker, I'm freaking out at 592. I'm like, I don't understand that whatsoever. But like 607, and then the slider at 5.5. Absolutely. Like, it's a PLA. The equivalent to ERA of that four seamer is 0.42. He's back.
He's the best four seamer I've got for the year is Bryce Miller at 124 stuff plus, and DeGrom's at 134.
Yeah, so, I mean, there
the difference
you go.
Between that, you know, 10 points of difference there. That's the difference between Bryce Miller and Freddie Peralta at 7. So,
oh man. And the last point I'll make is the Tommy John honeymoon. I don't know if I believe it, but there is an argument that a guy who just repaired his elbow is healthier than the guy who didn't.
Yeah.
Right. So,
at least in the elbow, I think the thing that sucks with is that sometimes the hamstrings or other things can go and you can still,
good
you can
point.
Be right. His elbow was fine all year, but he missed a bunch of time for other stuff. So
yeah,
that's all possible.
Yeah. 2021, it was forearm, which is tied to TJ. In 2022, it was shoulder. And then of course, TJ 2023 and 2024.
So it's always, it's been different things. So it's not always just the elbow. But, you know, I tend to think that's why I bring up the fact that he's pitched, that I find that important. Because he's demonstrated his healthiness. Like Tyler Mahle, that's why I don't know what Tyler Mahle did. Mm-hmm. He came back and he pitched. It wasn't quite as good as stuff as before. And then he went right back on the injured list. So that one is a tough one for me.
The last thing I have to do is I have to show you, you know, I have to show you Jacob DeGrom's headshot, because as we talk about this, I think people aren't really understanding what this looks like. And I think he actually feels how we feel. if you see this on the screen right now. He's just like, I don't know. I don't know at all. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. All right. So I want to continue on with really what we were going for initially, which was reviewing that initial list that we had in March and kind of seeing how things played out throughout the rest of the year. So, you know, I know you had at least one guy right off the top of your head wanted to bring up.
Let's give ourselves flowers first.
Yes. Let us
bask in our glory. Let us remind everybody, you know, of the good things we've done.
That sounds lovely.
And what I did was I looked at, you know, the player, where I ranked them, where they ended up ranked, and where the ADP was. And what I'm looking for are people that I ranked ahead of ADP that did well in the end. And when that lines up like that, I've got Shota Imanaga, which I'm sure you do too. I was 15 ranks ahead of consensus.
Where were you and where was consensus?
I had him at 32 and consensus was 47.
31, let's go.
There we go. That's a win. Bryce Miller, maybe we both did that one. I had him at 34. Consensus was 46. So
40 here.
Yep. That's a good place to shop. Seth Lugo is the famous one. I had him at 53. Consensus had him at 74. What's great is that I really resisted the urge to pump Seth Lugo up into the 20s.
Oh, wow.
And so some people were mad during the season when I kept him sort of in the 30s and 40s,
yeah.
Because I was like, you know, it was a really good start, but you know, the strikeout rates, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he ended up 45th.
Hey, nice. Wow. Only 45th.
Wait, that's a difference. No, he ended up.
Yeah. I would imagine it'd be higher. No, I had him at 77. Eighth. Okay. There we go. Yeah. I had eight, Seth Lugo so as like,
maybe
a
I should have pushed him up more. I allotted myself for the wrong reasons. Anyway, but I still got him right at the beginning of the year. Seth Lugo, David Peterson,
A
guy I had. Garrett Crochet. I had him, I didn't have him particularly high, but I had him 87 consensus.
I had him 81
and consensus was 124. So
I should have had him higher. And I really regret early on with Crochet. I mean, that's a lesson about me understanding fastballs and what is effective, what isn't.
And then also,
adding the cutter after six starts really was a game changer for him.
There was a little bit of risk ranking the relievers turn starters, and we knew that.
Yeah.
We knew that there was an innings risk. So it was hard to kind of parse how many innings he would have and how good he'd be. Not everyone transitions from relieving to starting the same way. Like I have a general rule that's sort of 5 to 10 points of stuff that you drop, but some guys drop a lot more and some guys, you know, stay about the same. So Crochet actually stayed very similar. Crochet was one. Ronaldo Lopez, similar boat.
Yeah.
I had him 78, consensus 109.
61.
Nice.
Yes.
Tyon was a much smaller win. I had him 99. Consensus had a 114, but he ended up the 37th best pitcher.
Really? I mean, how many wins, I assume, from that? And again, that's also volume. He just kind of went throughout the entire
season. It wasn't the best season from him, but that's when I had him at 99. I was like, no, he's a top 100 guy. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I had Luisa Heel 59 points ahead of consensus.
48 here.
Nice.
You?
You had him at 48?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a huge win. I had Tanner Houck and Jack Flaherty. I'm amazed that I had Jack Flaherty ahead of consensus, but I had Tanner Houck and Jack Flaherty ahead of consensus. And then Bowden Francis.
Nice.
At the beginning of the year had him 108, and he ended up 34th overall.
So 94 for Bowden for me, Flaherty 44 and 52 Houck.
Yeah.
So these are flowers.
Are
guys.
Ones for zero.
These are the flowers.
Yeah. Those are the flowers.
I don't know exactly the ADP like you do in front. I would imagine Cole Reagan's at 9 for me would be a win, I think, relative to ADP and how the season
Reagan's,
has gone.
Ended up the 17th best pitcher.
I'll take that all day.
But he was, the consensus rank was 23rd.
Okay. Bailey Ober 24. I would think over, would be aggressive.
Yes, I had him 39. Consensus had him 32, and he ended up 15th.
Yeah. Michael King at 27.
Oh, that might be a good one for both of us. I had him 25. Consensus had him 35, and he ended up 20th.
There we go. And I guess, I mean, it's pretty cool to see both of us kind of linked a lot with these.
Yeah.
Yusei Kikuchi at 54. I don't know if that is. I know by the end of the year,
Kikuchi ended up as the 59th best starter of the year. But consensus was 65, so you were more right.
So that's actually splitting.
Yeah, it's
kind of there.
I was actually a little bit too aggressive on it, maybe.
Jared Jones at 63.
Yes, that's a flowers for both of us. Jones, let's see here. Jones was consensus 171. Like, he wasn't being drafted at all. Yeah. I had him 84. You had him?
I had him at 63.
And it was 70 for the
year. Now, I really do want to say, though, this is an update that happened pretty much the day before opening day.
Yeah, I'm using right before.
Right. So like ADP is a little, I don't know if that's actually what like the last couple of days ADP.
Yeah. I just use what was in the Fangraphs auction calculator.
So there you go. So there is that. There's also the fact that I'm doing it for 12 teamers. So that makes me more aggressive on the upside guys.
I think that happens when you're talking about Hauk and you know,
Flaherty and Heal, for example.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to talk about the real point of this, though. And actually, before we even go into the failures that we had, yes, we had many of them. We're going to talk about them, and all about kind of adjustments for next year. I do want to review why we went for those guys in particular to see if that can actually stick around for next year. We'll talk about that after this break. So, is there a consistent theme, at least for your guys? That you mentioned that you feel like, okay, cool, this is a lesson, this is a thing that I lean on that others didn't, they didn't believe, that I think is, you know, more sustainable moving forward.
I mean, there's definitely a bucket of high stuff, low sample. So that's the Jared Jones, Luis Heal, Shota Imanaga, Bryce Miller, Garrett Crochet bucket, you know.
Yep. Definitely.
That, you know, that's a bucket. I think even Bowden Francis, by that point, I'd had enough to see that his fastball was good.
Sure.
So that's a big bucket. That's a good place to go shopping. Another one was just correctly nailing the reliever turnarounds. Although,
I've got two of my misses in here.
Yeah, Puck. I was
in Hall.
Well, Puck, I was actually on consensus on, so I did not get too excited about him, but consensus was pretty wrong.
Yeah.
And who was the other one that didn't? I mean, Hicks, I was ahead of consensus on, and it was a loss. But
yeah,
for, you know, Hicks, for the all the Hicks buying I did, I also bought into Lopez and Crochet. So
right.
It seems like if we do hear that Griffin Jacks and Nate Pearson are becoming starters next year, as long as we don't get too excited and we pay the right price for them, it seems like one of them at least will work out. You know,
it's interesting. So I think there are ways for us to look at those relievers turn starters and kind of pick out like, okay, which ones worked. And let's think about it this way. Outside of Jordan Hicks, because Hicks was always kind of weird as also throwing like a sinker for velocity and not really a strike throwing with other stuff. Mm-hmm. Who are the relievers turned starters who had two qualities? A, secondary that is legit, and B, had a hard four-seamer. That's Renato Lopez and Garrett Crochet, not AJ Puck and DL Hall.
And
right? They had good shape, but they didn't have good velocity.
Not some Hicks, but Hicks was a weird one because this also speaks to what you're talking about the season. Mm-hmm. Hicks was a win, I think.
Yeah, at first he was.
When you look at the end, it'll be a loss. But I think for most people, they had him during the good times,
right?
And then they stopped having him during the bad times. So they probably ended up more positive than whatever sort of
the player rater would say or something along those lines. Yeah. No, I'm with you, and I think that's another major thing I say all the time in preseason, that you are not drafting a best ball team.
Yeah.
Like I put out another poll yesterday, which I think is really, really helpful, asking everybody, hey, look at your starting pitchers from your draft this year in 12 teamers. How many of them are still on your team? 0, 1 to 2, 3 to 4, and 5+. And it, I think it's about 25% are 0 to 1 to 2. Yeah. Like that's insane, right? There's so many, fewer than half at 5 or more. And when you think about that, it's like just 4 guys are going to stick around here. Yeah. So go aggressive into.
I have a main event team where we have the most points, the most pitching points on the league. And I was trying to like look at it and be like, oh yeah, we won because we drafted these guys. But I was looking at my roster as it stands now.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like looking through the pitchers and I was like, I was like, well, we drafted George Kirby. I know that.
Yeah.
And we drafted Josh Hader. I know that. And everybody else. Oh, and Seth Lugo.
Okay.
So those, I had three yeah, pitchers and we were the number one pitching staff.
Right.
And we had Joe Ryan for a lot part of the season. So he could have almost made it to the end, but like, you know, three pitchers might have made it from day one. And so I guess we drafted Tanner Houck. So 4. And that the difference between having 2 that make it all the way to the end and having 4 might actually be the difference between being a middling staff and being.
Well, that is a good point. The other thought I have is there is an argument to be made like, all right, take more chances then that you can also make quick decisions on. This is a thing I'm so in on. Like you have
attack
to get guys
the middle, that just attack like, the middle, attack
yeah,
the middle.
Attack the middle, but you can't get guys that you have to send your hands on. Like right, that yeah. You are just like, well, I don't know if Brady Singer is doing this thing or not. Is this a different guy?
That's why I don't want to overlearn from the Jameson Taillon one.
Yes.
Because, you know, he was a guy I had 99. Consensus had 114. He ended up 37. He might have been a trap if I had, you know, bought in and then had to, you know, decide start to start. If he'd had more of a, like the year he had the year last year before, not this year,
right?
You know, where he's like, Bassett, where you're like, oh, there's
a lot of good starts this year.
They're good, a couple good starts, but I have to, right? And I've been trying to figure it out all year. So, I will always have space, especially the deeper leagues. I will always have space for Jameson Taillon on my team and players like that.
Right.
But you don't want to overinvest and I don't think you want to create an archetype that you're necessarily looking for. That's the type of player where you're like, hey, that's a credible starter that nobody's drafted yet and, you know, could have a good season. He could have a top 40 season. Jameson Taillon just did. So there's going to be guys like that next year. I don't know that I have them off the top of my head, but
yeah,
you know, somebody will drop a little far. Like Nathan Eovaldi might drop all the way to 70th next year, you know, by ADP. I just think because he's getting older and people remember the end of the season. The end of
when
season
you say 70th, do you mean overall?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. I think that's going to happen. Absolutely.
Right. And I don't love him at 50 and he ended up the season 43rd.
Yeah.
So that might be, some people would be like, well, that's wrong. You can't draft. He was 43rd last year. And he's been good for a while. No, actually 70 is where, because the upside is not to join the top 20 at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You have to hit that.
The upside is just to throw another top 40 season or top 50 season. So you actually want to spend like a 70th type pick on that. And that's the tie on Eovaldi, somebody that comes to mind when I think of like
very, very quickly. I do want to know. I actually discovered this today writing about Eovaldi. Because he hit 300 innings in his 2 years, the vesting option that they had for his contract for next year at $20 million actually turns into a player option. So he could actually not be on the Rangers next year.
Yeah, I don't think he's on the Rangers. One thing I think he might do is turn it into a 3-year deal with the Rangers.
Yeah, that could absolutely happen. I think that's a really good point of kind of how I attack this a bit is I generally have 2 rules going into it. Is I need 4 starters that I'm drafting that safe for injury, I feel confident in their ability that they would stay on my team. Mm-hmm. Just having some sort of bedrock. I'm all about the aggression of your upside guys and everything like that, definitely. But you have to have some sort of bedrock that allows it so that when those mistakes happen, you're not just completely in a ditch with nothing to save you. The other side of it is not going for necessarily the Eovaldi types, right? Because I want to be drafting guys who aren't going to be SP30s or SP40s. To win a league, you have to get Seth Lugo that goes into SP10. You know, you need to actually have something that is exceptional and better than expected that jump farther than their value. I mean, Ariel Cohen says this about auction drafts. If you spend $260 and get $260 in value, you are a middle team. You are like, if you get the value you spent, you lose because you are in sixth. You have to get more value, right? So the Eovaldi is a perfect type of like, yeah, but the ceiling isn't high enough for me. That's why it would be like Bailey Ober instead of it. He could turn into that kind of player. Bryce Miller would be someone that hopefully the secondaries come around. You have to be able to go for the guys that you don't think you're going to drop and also have that ability to leap further. So there's so many thoughts about it.
There's one more bucket that I think is down here, which is the Seth Lugo, David Peterson bucket. And they're a little bit about just context. You know, like David Peterson was going to pitch this year. You know, you just knew that from the way that the roster was set up. And David Peterson is going to pitch in a great pitcher's park. You know, so that alone makes him interesting, you know, and he only ended up 61st, where Seth Lugo has ended up 8th. So they're not exactly in the same bucket, but like there's something to be said for, I don't love Braxton Garrett, you know, and he's becoming off injury and he never had great stuff and all this stuff. But Braxton Garrett would belong in this if he was coming back healthy, looked great, and was immediately slotting into the Marlins rotation next year.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be other pitchers. Like when I was talking about Landon Roop earlier, you know, do I love him or do I really like him? And I love the context. So there are certain, you know, who's going to be the Mariners fifth starter, or like, you know, or if they'd make a trade, is someone going to step into that rotation? You know, there's certain places where I'm like, you know, Kansas City, Seattle, San Francisco, Miami, like I'm looking for guys that in New York, I'm looking for guys that get a chance. Megill is somebody that we've talked about as somebody that you don't love. I maybe like a little better. He's been better at 96. You know, he's a little bit up and down. He's a little bit on edge. I like him a little better, partially because of context. So.
No, yeah, I think I'm with you on Megill of, I mean, not necessarily in a 12-teamer, but as someone that I'm just circling to see if there are things that we like in spring.
Yeah. I'd love to hear his velocity in spring. Yeah, I think that's
right.
That's
and really just the consistency, honestly, is like, is he leaning into sliders, cutters, changeups well and spotting four-seamers? Like that, I feel, is the other element to him. But when you said Seattle there, I mean, you're just saying in general, if they are a part of Seattle, that's a good thing? Or are you expecting a fifth spot to be open there?
Well, there's just a lot of, we have a whole offseason to wait, but like there's a lot.
Okay, they could deal one of those five, you're saying.
Everyone's been doing that. That makes sense. Like Twitter, you know, hey, should we trade, you know, Spencer Steer for, you know,
I see.
Logan Gilbert.
Yeah, I mean, I understand just like we're talking about with fantasy teams for a major league club, it's kind of nice having a fifth spot to figure something else out too, right? Instead of just having only five.
Yeah, they could develop somebody that could jump into that, and they've been having trouble like creating offense. So I think they might just go with the five and be fine. But you know, there's a little bit part of why I took Bryce Miller. I guess the last one that I can think of in this group, at least for me, is Tanner Houck. I would put him in a bucket of spring training information. And what I liked was kind of turfing the four seam, focusing on slider, sinker, slider, splitter. Mm-hmm. And there were good velocity readings in the spring.
Right. He so was actually, was, oh my gosh, he was such a mystery. We heard whispers. We had no stat test data.
Yeah, we couldn't get, there weren't actually any readings for a while.
And I will say that's actually a really good point, because a lot of the guys that we're talking about that we hit on, yes, Ronaldo Lopez, I got data on that. I was like, this four-seamer is great. I remember going to one of the spring training games in, it wasn't the Dunedin one, but it was one of the stadiums, and maybe it was the Dunedin, I don't know. Is that where we went in Florida? I don't care. I saw him at that and I was like, oh, I don't know. He looks kind of off and everything, because I'm totally a scout and totally can identify that from like three pitches. And then actually watched it on TV later with the data. I was like, oh no, this is great. I love this. And Jared Jones was a guy that I didn't really know about. I knew that I liked him on, you know, just basic Statcast readings from 2023, but seeing this in spring training, oh wait, hold on a second, we've got better data now and this is legit and this fastball is amazing and he has a great slider. Like, how could we not be in on this? We were banging the table asking for him to be in that rotation, all of a sudden he was, and that pushed them up. Tanner Houck was actually a hit for me because he had such a good opening schedule. And it was like, look, I don't think that Tanner Houck has a good weapon against lefties. He eventually did the splitter and then it went away in the second half. But I was like, all right, I'll take a chance here to see if this works because it's such a good schedule. And there you go. And then that worked out. Jack Flaherty was amazing in the spring. Mm-hmm. We didn't like, we all wrote him off. We had no plans for him. He looked so bad at times last
and
year.
And I don't love him as a pitcher because he's never had great stuff. Plus, you know, his shape on his fastball is only okay. You know, he's been very velocity dependent. The reason I ended up 12 higher than consensus on him, or even more, 16 higher on consensus on him, was context. I like Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit is another place I like pitchers. So when you hear me talk about Casey Mize here and you hear me maybe circle Casey Mize as a late game sleeper next year, it's because, you know, partially because that stadium is going to help him out.
But right. So, I mean, so with Flaherty, I mean, he got into a rhythm with his slider down and it was there for months. And it was a case like, all right, well, he's got
that might be a good spot to transition to some of my misses.
Yeah, right. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk about some of the misses, especially. I mean, I think we have some very similar ones here. But I think at the end of the day, it's a combination of understanding the opportunities and getting good reading from spring and taking chances on guys that are not just having performances that are good, but actually are improving on skills we saw from 2024 in 2025 spring training, hoping that that does stick. Really leaning into that, not so heavily for the guys at the top, but just more so filling in those holes. And yeah, opportunity. Opportunity is everything. If they are only going to be going like four innings or something like that, then just doesn't matter. Also seeing Ryan Pepiot throw high four seamers. Oh, yes, that was so fun. That was so fun to see it in spring. It's like, he's doing the thing that the Dodgers refused to do. And he's doing it, and it's an elite four seamer. Okay, we're going to talk about the ones that are not flowers. They have been plucked and been sitting in your vase for far too long. After this break. All right, let's bring it down. Let's bring it down a moment, Eno.
This is the sad part.
This is the most important part, though. We have to review. We have to look at mistakes. That's how we learn. What is development without failure, Eno?
Okay. All right, well, I can tell you right now, there is one bucket that almost all these guys go into. And this is that just last week you were telling me that I was getting wrong.
And I got it. Was I right? I don't know.
Do you remember the Royals pitcher I got wrong?
Singer?
Oh, and before that.
Oh, gosh. Waka? Oh, Waka.
Yeah.
Waka. Oh, yeah. Waka. Bad stuff. It's got to be bad stuff.
So the bucket that I get wrong, and I'm going to poison the well here, but I think once you hear the names, you're like, oh, yeah. The bucket I got wrong is old guy with bad stuff.
Yeah.
So and this is the part where they were good and I had them behind consensus because there's another way to get things wrong.
Yeah,
that one will be obvious too. Will be young guys with great stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. That's me too.
But the old guys with bad stuff that outperformed, that did so much better than I expected, and actually there's one that I should have spotted coming, but and I won't put him in this. But so Zach Littell, Brady Singer, Michael Waka, Eric Fetty, Nick Martinez. I'm going to make Cody Bradford an honorary old man.
Oh, yeah.
And Jose Quintana. All these guys I had on average about 25 spots lower than consensus. And they all ended up on the very, like, but in my defense, what I will say is none of them ended up as a top pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this is going to happen and you're okay with that.
They ended up like the best of the bet of that group is Michael Waka at 31st or Nick Martinez.
Oh, wow. So hold on. This actually makes me feel so much better. Because I don't know if you guys remember this. Like one of the very first episodes of The Craft, maybe it wasn't even that. It was the Rates and Barrels podcast. I don't remember. But it was like, okay, Seth Lugo versus Michael Wacha. I was like, it's Michael Wacha. You're like, it's Seth Lugo. And I don't know. If you got to hear the one, it was good. Obviously.
Yeah, in the end, that was a good debate.
I'm not so bad about Michael Wacha the entire year.
He ended up, he ended up the 30.
I mean, he's had a really good final month.
Yeah,
Michael Wacha has found his groove.
He ended up 31st overall. And I guess what I would say is that a lot of these guys were guys that would be hop on and off your team. So I don't feel too bad about missing them in the spring. Maybe what I should learn is to look at those guys and instead of putting them really low, look at their first their opening schedules like you do. Look at the first month, because if Michael Wacha has like four out of his first six starts in Kansas City against the White Sox and, you know, whoever, then maybe I should, you know, rank him just a little bit higher, maybe 20 points higher, higher. The reason they're also so high is that I had them in the hundreds, you know, so it looks bad, but I could rank a guy like I had Michael Wacha 121. I could have, if I looked at the schedule and he had a good opening schedule, I could rank him 105.
Yeah.
You know, there is not actually that much of a difference there, too. So,
right. I mean,
there's a bit of a lie there that, like, you know, oh, you missed them by 30 points on average. Well, yeah, I ranked them 145. Yeah. And that should have been 115.
Really? And honestly, like those conversations, they're going to be the guys that, as you're mentioning, are your Toby types, the ones that got there because of volume. So they're going to be inside of that top 50 or so player rater.
Quintana, to some extent. You know,
I mean, Quintana is a very much in and out of rhythm right now. Actually, I think he's led one run in the last five games. And even the Mets are like, we don't want to start him right now in this big situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's right, because he's not in rhythm. He's just throwing sinkers over the plate to the Nationals. And like, I guess we'll hit this. You know, it's not him at his peak. But my point here is that, yes, we could focus on the misses of those volume guys. I think we are in agreement that we're okay missing that. And there's going to be some of those older guys who do well at certain points in the year. And you're going to want to jump in as streamers here and there. But they're not the ones that you languish about. They're not the ones that are like, oh, man, I can't believe I missed on whatever guy that is in the top 20 right now out of nowhere. Like if you missed out on, you know, if you're like me and missed out on Paul Skeens, I'm so upset at myself. But I just didn't stash him. I stashed Jobe instead. You know,
I did not see Skeens coming up so quickly, and I was a little nervous about the fastball shape. So I that's one. So now we get into the bucket of guys who did well that hurt, and there's very few of them actually. Now that I look through this, it's Paul Skeens, Gavin Stone.
Oh, Stone.
And
I'm at 62.
I don't actually know. Andrew Abbott ended up, you know, sort of fizzling out in the end. So
Andrew Abbott was not believable. He was so weird. And I feel like any manager who had Andrew Abbott was not like thrilled about their draft pick.
I don't know why. Okay. I don't know why I had Pepio, 10, 15 points below consensus. So that one hurts.
Really?
Stone and Pepio are young players that I should have seen coming. Stone, though, what I will say is this. His fastball shape was very mediocre last year.
Yes.
And I just didn't see it in spring. Like maybe I didn't see the numbers in spring, or he didn't get the numbers in spring, or maybe just I missed him. But like his fastball has been improving over the course of his career. He's been adding vertical movement to it. And
I didn't notice it either. First game of the year was 95.4, but actually his third was 94.5. So it wasn't like it was just all of a sudden this sustained new floor that he had. It did fluctuate through the year for Gavin Stone's four seamer. And I mean, where was the actual ADP of Stone entering the year?
What I have here is 103, and I've had him 130th, and he ended up 51st.
Okay, I had it 62, but I didn't feel like I was like right about it. You know,
you were ahead of consensus and you were closer to right because he ended up 51st.
I think that I'm going to say at least like by March or something I corrected there for Stone to be involved. I don't know what, but I feel like that. I remember putting this here and being like, I guess I'm like here-ish on Stone.
Maybe there was some debate about if he was in, even in the rotation.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Maybe the, not the Pepio deal. What was it? Oh, it was Emmett Sheehan.
Going down.
Yeah, going down.
It was kind of Sheehan versus Stone for a roster. Yes. And Sheehan's on my one of my misses the other way. So I thought Sheehan got the job and Stone didn't get it. And I liked Sheehan a little better. So
yeah. Okay. So I mean that explains that a little bit. But also with Gavin Stone, he was a changeup first guy without an overpowering fastball, without a great slider. The four seamer got better.
The four seamer got a little bit better. Yeah. They just made those things a little bit better. And not all the guys do that. Not all the guys do that. We're waiting for Casey Mize to do that, where he's got the good splitter, and he's got the four seam, and we're just waiting for him to sort of.
Does he have the good splitter? Is that actually going to say he's a good splitter?
I don't know. It was his number one off speed pitch. It was his number one pitch coming in.
I know
it goes in and out. I have a really hard time evaluating splitters, but I'm just sort of assuming that someone who got drafted 1-1 based on his splitter to some extent.
Rhett Lauder is an interesting example of this, right? Mm-hmm. Of Lauder, actually, this is in the context of all of this. Lauder, I think he was a third overall, something like that, or at least in the first round, in the first 10. And what I've seen from Rhett Lauder is kind of the weirdest comp I have for him is Max Meyer, because it's a really good slider and then just nothing else kind of supporting him. Mm-hmm. But it's like 94. Pushing 95 on the sinker / four seamer, they're not exceptional. And, you know, that's a case where I'm going to say, yeah, I'm not in on Lauder. But then again, sophomore year, maybe there's something that gets a little bit better here, right? Mm-hmm. And Lauder then, who had good control, and I'm surprised by it considering how much he just kind of big wind up and everything, it still makes it consistent, I guess. That's a case where I'm likely to be out on this, and that could be a guy that gets the volume in Cincinnati. They're going to let him go 90 pitches every single time. And
he's not his friend necessarily with that park. And
right. Well, that's never going to help him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's just, I'm just thinking just more about that kind of mold of the guy who has the pedigree necessarily. So we know that there is a ceiling that we aren't really aware of yet, or at least haven't seen. There's like an expectation of development, I guess.
Oh, you're also right to bring up the changeup thing, though, because Pepio and Stone changeup first, developing that second pitch. So right. Maybe I'm so fascinated with Mize because I'm trying to learn off of those misses.
Mm.
I mean, like,
yeah,
I think he's a changeup first guy that, you know, he threw his slider 89 in the last start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah, but he also was that the game where everything was velocity was up and everything was everywhere, like scattered.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
he was like, I think that was just like a hack it. I'm just gonna go as hard as I can. Start, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think somewhere in there, there's still a good pitcher. So.
Well, right. Those were certainly my misses too. Mize and Manning. I was so enthused by their spring showcases of their four seamers. They were looking like
Mize is on my other list. So.
Like, yeah, 56, 50, yeah, I'm sorry, not 56, like 96, 97 fastballs, both Manning and Mize, both as command guys who with Manning already had a really good slider. And like the starts that we saw were successful for him were 95. And this was like 96 with Vert. And like he had it was just a flat angle with extension. It was the Wheeler method. And like, oh my gosh, here it is. Something that I've thought about all year about mining in Mize and Manning, mining and Maze, is actually something you've really alerted to me about the necessity for sinkers and four seamers having two fastballs.
Mm.
And Wheeler, I've never truly could articulate why Wheeler is so good. Because we've seen other guys with command and with good extension and generally flat arm angles not have as good of a four-seamer. But I think it's because the four-seamer and the sinker are present. And it's just very tough to discern which one is coming at guys at a given time. And then we've seen it with the Mariners as well. But we don't really see it with Mize and Manning. They have these four-seamers, but we don't see that split.
So Mize is coming, the sinker's coming back.
Okay. So he told me
that his hitting coach told him that it's so difficult to prepare against hitters with two fastballs or three fastballs. I looked around the league at who has the pitchers with the most of the pitchers with three fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
Mets, Phillies.
Oh, that's interesting. Manaea might be a weird one because it's like, what is it? But Severino certainly four seamer and sinker.
Four seamer sinker have, and cutter and like
oh yeah, well right, right.
And right. Ranger Suarez, you know, none of the fastballs are that good, but he has all three of them.
Yeah, yeah. Martin Perez does that too.
Yeah.
So. Quintana certainly does. He leaves a four seamer upstairs and then has the sinker underneath and then the I don't know if it's necessarily a cutter. Sometimes it's a cutter, but it's really change up and curve. But yeah, I might go to Kyle Bland and be like, all right, give me the guys who throw like 50% fastballs and have at least 20% on both. Or at least just say 20% each on sinker and four seamer.
I've done because things I'm where starting to believe this. When I'm doing rankings, like I have hidden fields that I don't put in my rankings that, you know, maybe they'll show up on the Google Doc that I have or whatever. I think one of my hidden fields in the past has been just how many pitch types, you know, like how many.
Yeah, right. That's the one that like overwrites stuff a bit. Right?
Yeah. And then I think I'll have how many fastballs this year. So just to have, you know, that.
Is that how Mitch Keller has gotten it done?
Who? Yeah.
Mitch Keller. But he's
I think it's he does not have good innate command. And so he throws every pitch you'd want him to throw. The stuff is good. He has three fastballs. If you gave him 55 command, I think he'd be an ace.
No, interesting. He just can't get swing and miss. It's so unreal.
Every once in a while, he just runs into one of those 35 command days, and those are the blowups.
Was there anyone else who you saw that consensus was higher on, and they were right than you were entering this year?
Let's see here, going upstream a little bit.
I can put in here that I certainly was down on Dylan Cease again, 32.
I guess people were more right than Andrew Abbott. I was up on Cease, so.
I still believe that he's, I think I've identified the biggest problem, the reason for his volatility is against left-handers. He doesn't like his slider as much, obviously. I mean, I think he's just kind of less confident with it. And the four-seamer isn't always well spotted. And when those games that his four-seamer is like over the plate, it just gets bamboozled. When he's able to get it up against the left-handers and out of the zone, really, he's okay. So why I keep banging the drum on him learning his cutter, but whatever.
Tanner Bibee, dude.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 34 for me.
I have 38. Consensus was 29, and he ended up 25.
I wrote about him this morning. How do you feel about Tanner Bibee now for next year?
I think I will have him in the top 30.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, he could be a multiple fastball guy. He could throw a cutter maybe. There's some things he can do. I think the splatter is special. And even though the fastball shape isn't good, I think the velo is enough. I think he does just enough. He's not Max Meyer.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to throw away the whole shoulder barking thing and like expecting any sort of volume issue or whatever. I'm just going to not think about that right now. With Bibee, he's always so interesting because he is an over the top guy and he does go change up slider. And sometimes the curve is there. The fastball is hittable. The slider and change are not these like amazingly spotted pitches. But I think Bibee is one of those guys that I underrate because I don't understand how it looks out of the hand. And I think he's an over the top one that is just so hard to discern. Is this the slider? Is this the changeup? Is it the four seamer?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's making these pitches perform better in the zone than their locations would say.
Mm.
So I've been missing on Bibee. I'm going to have him higher than usual. I still like, I mean, I'm seeing my guys in my 20s. I see like Logan Gilbert. I see Michael King here. I see Yu Darvish. I see Chris Sale, Bailey Ober, Justin Steele, Joe Ryan. And I don't think I can put Tanner Bibee ahead of any of that. Maybe Darvish, but like,
yeah,
you know,
Darvish is a miss for me. I had him ahead of consensus. And because I think that's, you know, Darvish and there's another miss for me.
Musgrove, but he got hurt.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, Keaton Wynn is actually by ADP difference, my biggest miss.
Yeah, but that's hurt.
I had him 88. Consensus is 130, and he ended up 129. And
88s aren't on your 12 teamers.
I know it's really not that big a deal, but that's my biggest miss by him and Casey Mize and Edward Cabrera are my biggest misses by on the other way where I was ahead of consensus and they
I'm going to tell you I still can't quit Edward Cabrera.
I think it's because of Dylan Cease. You know, on some level, you're just like, could he Dylan Cease at some point? Like, maybe.
I mean, I think he can.
Trust your stuff in the zone. Just throw everything in the zone as hard as you can. Man.
He's so good. But the thing is also the slider, like it shows up sometimes. And I'm like, why don't you throw this more? It's always good. It's always good. I don't know. We're going to talk about those specific guys, though, that are more that we were high on and were misses. And yes, we're both going to say the same name at the same time after this break. All right, Eno, on the count of three, you're going to shout this name with me, okay? This is the guy that I would say is one of our biggest misses where we were high on them. They did not come through. One, two, three,
Bobby Miller. You know what the weirdest thing is, dude? I looked back and I had him 17.
Mm-hmm.
Consensus had him 19.
Okay. All right. I had him at 15.
So we reined ourselves in. I mean, we were really excited. We reined ourselves in. He's actually one of my smaller misses up here. He is the pitcher that did the worst compared to his ADP on the season.
Hmm.
And so he is a big miss for us. But I will have to just say, he was a big miss for everybody.
This is true.
What's the difference between 15 and 19 and 17? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's not like... I mean, also the other guys around, like, okay, Yamamoto had at 16 who... Injury, fine. Zach Eflin was at 17, and honestly, like, that's I think where consensus was. This is also, by the way, again, removing the guys who were injured. So, like, Cole is not on here, and Bradish isn't on here, and so on and so forth. But Eflin was, you know, until he really showed up to the Orioles, it was pretty bad. Grayson Rodriguez got hurt. Freddy Peralta was a complete just annoyance the entire year. So it's, you know, yeah, Bobby Miller is a part of that, but it's not like, like Aaron Nola's ahead. I was like, fine, I'll put Aaron Nola ahead of him. All right, I'll do it. I'll just stick it out and do that.
It's also, you know? I think, not a great place to shop. You know, I think you want to get one guy that's in your top, you know, 10 if you can. And then when I say tack the middle, try to get one guy who's in your top 10, maybe another guy in your top 20, and then really go to town sort of 20 through 40.
I mean, this is what's going to be so interesting as I do the top 200 is I get the sense that there are just so many good pitchers. There really are so many of them. And I'm actually really curious where Billy Ober is going to go.
Paul Sporker with you, or did he say there's not a lot of good pitchers?
Oh, is that what he said? There are none?
I don't know.
That's so funny.
I'm just wondering what Paul would think.
No, I think he's on the same page of just like, oh man, this guy's great. This guy's great. And I think this year certainly highlighted that there's more potential for guys to jump into that eventual top 20 or so than usual. And like, where's Billy Ober going to go? He's near a 4 ERA right now, yet he has a 1 whip and 187 strikeouts. Right?
And I was making fun of this the other day. If you take away Patrick Corbin's blowups, he has a 3.75 ERA on the season. I mean,
how many of them are there, though?
45 innings in which he gave up like 65 earned runs.
Oh, my gosh.
So
45 innings worth. That's in a blow up. So you can't even say like, well, those are average 6 innings. No, they're not. They're like,
and what's hilarious, too, is that you take all those away and he's like, OK. You think if you take Bailey Ober's blow ups away, he probably has like a 2.8 ERA.
But it was like 4 or 5 good starts in 6 or something like that. Like, it actually, the harder cutter is better for Patrick Corbin. I'm just going to say that, you know, he is the better version of himself.
I will have zero shares. But anyway, so Bobby Miller, where he ended up, I ended up with 1 share after all that, just because it's not a place I went shopping. Right. It's not a place. So I, you know, some places where I ended up, oh, I don't have an ace. I did things where I got Bobby Miller and Framber Valdez in one thing where I just tried to double up.
Man, you got fortune in that second half from Valdez finally finding his curve. Oh my gosh, it was
bad. The biggest misses for everybody were Bobby Miller, Jordan Montgomery, Justin Verlander. What did I just say?
I don't know, but I remember Frank Sanfilippo calling him Justin Verlander, which will always stick with me. I love it.
So anyway, Bobby Miller, Jordan Montgomery, Justin Verlander, Jesus Luzardo, and Walker Buehler. So that's the Furious Five at the bottom. I had Montgomery, Verlander, and Miller ahead of ADP, barely. So
I went down on Montgomery,
and I'm not going to claim Jordan Montgomery is a miss for me. I'm sorry. Like I was like, I have him at 41. That I thought that meant that nobody would draft him off of my rankings. I hope nobody did. I never said he was good
or something like that. I was just like, I have to draft. What's so funny is that they're always like two guys who I want to group with everyone I have in the 60s and 70s, but I feel like I just have to not.
That's right.
And yeah, that was not Montgomery. Jordan Montgomery was one of them. For once, it was like Eduardo Rodriguez 1 year, I think.
Yeah, I may in the future just be like, I don't like him. So why do I have to have him in the 50s just because everybody else does? I'm just gonna put him lower.
I try to ignore everyone else. I mean, I guess I could feel that this is a little bit more believable of a Toby kind of season than the other ones. But I'm just gonna say, you know what? I don't care. Like, I don't feel like I need to go after this to do it. So I'm just gonna rank him underneath. I'm just gonna try and do it this year.
So next two are actual misses for me. I also feel kind of ambivalent. I'm not sure how much to learn about them. I had Aaron Civale 40th, and Civale was ranked 55th by the consensus, and he ended up 107th. So I think that's a miss for everybody.
Yep.
56, I think he was a good pitcher in Tampa. And the next guy, so here's where context can get you in trouble. Aaron Civale and Trevor Rogers.
Yeah.
I was higher than 15 over consensus. I had Trevor Rogers 76, consensus had him 94. He ended up 141st. So these guys did not do well. I thought the context was great. Tampa, Miami, you know, like healthy, have rotation spots. You know, I thought the context lined up. And in my defense, at least with Rogers at 76, I wasn't pushing him that hard. You know,
I had Rogers at 64 because it was a mystery box.
Yeah, exactly. And it could turn out great.
Right.
And to your point about pick guys there where you can make a decision quickly, I don't think anybody.
Exactly.
It's a little bit hard if it's a draft and hold. Like, I have a couple Trevor Rogers in draft and hold, and I'm like, God, I have you all year.
Yeah.
But in like a waiver league, like, you picked him up and you were like, well, that didn't work out. And you moved on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what that tier was. Louis Varland is right after at 65. Cause like, if he gets a rotation spot, I'm curious if this would work and drop that one. Civale is actually, it's so funny you mentioned him because I was trying to think of the other guys like Jordan Montgomery, Eduardo Rodriguez. Who was it that I felt like I had to raise who felt like a Toby bucket? And that was Civale.
Should we place a ceiling on guys with bad fastballs?
Yes. So
like, should they like just not get?
I mean, but then what about Seth Lugo? Right, and that's the problem, and that's what happens is like you see Seth Lugo have a great year like this, you see Zach Eflin to have the 2023 that he had, right, and that is what happens is you go, well, hold on a second, it can happen. This guy is that, and I think the lesson I have is, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, I'd be happy to miss on that than to be stuck with the Jordan Montgomery on my team, right? Yeah. I think the variable, the spectrum is much larger for those misses than the other way. And I'm just not going to be that guy. It's funny. I'm like arguing the stuff aside while I'm also saying like, command is the market inefficiency. It's about both. If you have a ceiling and you have command with stuff.
Yeah.
Those are the guys I go for as much as I possibly can.
Oh, we thought Bobby Miller had okay command at least.
Oh, Bobby Miller. You know what? I didn't even realize. I was just checking this again. I was looking at my, like, I have an image on my phone. I'm going through, like, my photos and just saying, no, I don't want this anymore or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I found a photo that is the PLV chart for Bobby Miller's four-seamer. And showcasing he has 7 feet of extension at a 99-mile-per-hour fastball.
Going into this season, yeah.
Yeah, which is just, guys, like knowing even more now, seeing a full season with these numbers in my head.
Nobody does that really.
That's absurd. It's like Garrett Crochet is like 97 and change with that.
Yeah.
Like a little bit more extent. Like what? And what does he do? Not throw it upstairs.
I'm going to put Bobby Miller in the Edward Cabrera bucket. I am now. I think going into the season it was hard to tell that he didn't have this good command though, because none of his walk rates in the minors suggest he has bad command. His location data before this didn't suggest he had it.
But he has the knee injury, though. That's the explanation.
I think that's what really screwed him. I think that screwed him all year. So if he has a healthy season, I may be back on board.
Especially in Bobby Miller. Everyone's going to yell at me. I don't care.
And it's going to be super cheap next year. Yeah, I don't know where I'll put him. Probably in the 70s where, you know, I put Edward Cabrera last year, like sort of in that, hey, give it a shot. 60s, 70s, right. Like, you know, have a share or two because you might go ham.
So this is the craziest part is so what I do every year, I do this top 200. And by the time it gets to be the end of March, the ones that I had in tier eight were all my upside guys. We're all like, look, I think this is the point in your 12 teamers that you just go get your guy in whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like tier six had your Bybee and your Kelly. And
how'd you do in tier eight?
And stuff. Sorry?
How'd you do in tier eight?
Right. So tier eight was Casey Mize, but then also Jack Flaherty, was Cutter Crawford, AJ Puck, nice. DL Hall, Luis Heel, and Ryan Pepio. Right. And then had more of the safer ones in tier nine.
You'd be excited if you shopped in that tier. You got two of those pitchers. One of them turned out great. And the other one you dropped in week two.
Exactly. So what I'm getting at, though, is what we're saying about Bobby Miller was it cool. We put him in that Edward Cabrera tier and stuff because we have to put Christopher Sanchez and Jose Barrios and your Tanner Houck and everything.
Right. The people we might get in trouble with next year.
Right. And that's like, and what's going to happen is I'm like, well, okay, I can't not put these guys. I'm going to get yelled at the entire offseason and stuff.
You just have
I'm going to be like,
these are the guys that I'm putting here just so you don't yell at me.
Right. Exactly. This is the Toby tier to me. These are like the potential Holly ones or whatever. It's just like, yeah, I know they're going to be drafted. Everyone's going to, some of these are going to hit and stuff too in a way, but I'm going to likely just say, no, tier eight, here we go. And Bobby Miller is going to be in the 40s or so for me. And just be like, I want to have Bobby Miller. I want to know that one instead of just sitting on my hands wondering if Nestor Cortez is okay.
Yeah, there's enough of those guys that I put somewhere just because I felt I had to that are in my miss category that I don't want to own. Like, I don't want to own Trevor Rogers as a mistake or Jordan Montgomery as a mistake. I have John Gray as a mistake. I don't want to own those.
No. Yeah. You don't want to manage John Gray.
I don't want to own Braxton Garrett as a mistake. Like it's a strange thing for me because, you know, and I think that I love, how did I end up ahead of pitchers I don't love? And then they end up on my mistake list. Like that doesn't make sense to me.
And also it's, you know, reflecting on all the player rater stuff too, you see at the end of the year, but that's not how your fantasy team works. Your fantasy team does not work of like you holding this guy even the entire year. The whole old example is like Eduardo Rodriguez having a 4.35 ERA on August 1st and 1.35 WHIP. And yes, he had a great September and August, but he's not on your team anymore. And you're not drafting this guy knowing that you're going to get the projection. You got to draft guys with it. Yeah, you'll pick up the Tyone. Okay, you can probably pick up the Lugo. You can pick up the Houck, all that kind of stuff. Just go get things that you feel good about early and then get ready to shift. Because again, top 100, only like two or three guys are on your team at the end of the year. Like, plan for that. Go be aggressive early on because you're going to have to swap anyway. So might as well be guys that you know you're getting rid of so you can just go marketing on the wire more than other people, you know?
Yeah. I've got one last grouping.
Yes. Oh, what we got?
These are people where they don't end up on the extremes of leaderboards because they're higher up. So all the differences are smaller.
Yeah.
But they could be potentially more important for people. So I had Kyle Harrison 73. Consensus had him 68. It was 101. So I didn't tell you to go buy him, but I could have been more negative. You know,
so 85 Kyle Harrison.
Yeah. Freddie Peralta, I had him 15. Consensus had him 13. He ended up 42. I don't think that's so much of a miss, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you still held on the entire year. I'm at 19.
You probably got value out of him.
Yeah, he still gave you strikeouts, and he's weird.
Paul Lopez, I had 9. Consensus had 6. He ended up 36.
Yeah, but
that's a lot like Peralta, where it's like, do you feel that sad about, you know, taking that guy? You might feel a little sad if you took him as your ace.
Yeah.
But if you did, you took him behind all the other aces and you got a bunch of hitters, you know, so like there are other pieces of context to that.
Gausman was I eventually landed on 7 and I hated it. I mean, even Logan Webb at 8, I hated too.
Yeah, I had him at 11. Consensus had Gossman at 9. He ended up 52nd.
Yeah.
I had
Consensus at okay, so but the like Garrett Cole was ahead of him.
But this is my point about why this is a bad place to shop.
Right.
Gossman 11, consensus 9, 52nd. Gallon 13th, consensus 10, ended up 53rd.
Yeah.
Grayson Rodriguez, consensus 18, me 18, 46 overall. Pablo Lopez, Freddy Peralta, you know, these are all the guys that were going sort of 9 to 13, where you tell yourself, ooh, I waited and I got some. Even Logan Webb, consensus 12, me 7, 50th. You know, so I feel like you tell yourself, oh, I waited and I still got an ace, you know.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, I mean, I got a pitcher that will stay with me to the end of the season. So
yeah.
I got something. But those guys didn't end up being aces.
Yeah, I really just look at tier two for me. This is before the season started. Lopez, Castillo, Kirby, Gosman, Webb, Reagan, Skubal, Glasnow, Gallen, Fried, Nola. I'd say only three of those would I be like, good. Reagan, Skubal,
Kirby,
Nola.
4, 5, 22nd overall. I mean, that's, okay. That's good. That's decent.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is like, if you are getting this guy as your SP1 and you're like, good, I got that guy, see? I mean, Castillo probably two, I guess, in there.
Burns is better. Two.
No,
two,
Burns was at 1, 2, 3 for me. It was like Spencer Strider, Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler was my 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, Burns ended up 11th overall. That's why I think he's in my top five for next year. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, he may not
like a weird down year of like not being that guy
at the end of the season, but he'll probably be a top 15 pitcher at the end of the
right.
season.
Right. Zach Wheeler, where'd he end up? It's gotta be like 1, 2, or 3.
I would Wheeler, me 3, consensus 3, ended up 3.
Yeah, 3 for me. Oh my gosh, guys, look at us, huh? We're just the best.
Skubal, so 6 for me, 11 consensus, 1 overall.
Yeah, 10 for me for Skubal.
I think you kind of want a top 5 pitcher, and then I think you kind of want to say Vaya con Dios for a while.
Well, I mean, let's be clear here though. A top 5 had Spencer Strider, it had Garrett Cole in there. For many
still had some misses.
Right. It's still weird, and I hope that Burns and Wheeler are going to be that. I hope Skubal is going to be that. Next year, you're probably going to see. I wouldn't be surprised if the top five is a mix of Burns, Wheeler, Skeens, Skubal, and then Garrett Crochet or Jacob DeGrom.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I think it's going to be. And yeah, a lot of reasons for all those guys not to work out.
And what's so stupid is Kirby's going to drop into the bucket I just said don't shop in.
Right.
He's going to
I mean, I'm not going to touch Kirby. I'm so frustrated watching him pitch. I know he's a savant. He's super smart. I get it.
But he also 22nd overall in season. Like that's
well, that's because of volume, and volume is the hardest thing for us to predict.
Oh, I mean, it's not just volume. What does he have, like a 3.2 ERA? Man, you're belly aching about a 3.2 ERA.
Well, hold on. Okay. Hold. Okay. You want to play the George Kirby game?
I do.
3.6 ERA, by the way, is what he has right now.
Oh, okay. It's been a little bit worse of a couple of weeks than I thought.
Okay. 173 strikeouts, which is great. Also, is not an elite 220.
108 whip is elite.
That is absolutely elite. 13 wins, 11 losses, 185 pitches. What Kirby gives you is volume. And volume is a weird bet, in my view.
Isn't that kind of? Isn't he like a Nola?
No, Nola gives me. I expect more strikeouts from Nola. I hope he is. I mean, that's two seasons. I mean, essentially, hasn't been injured yet. 25 games started, 31, 32. 25 was rookie year. For
he strikes me as a Nola, elite command.
It just doesn't have the swing and miss.
Up and down
it's
season.
Well, it's like 70th percentile swing and miss as
maybe,
a starter.
Maybe Nola's curve is better than anything that. Yeah,
that's why he sees the difference. I'm really shocked that he has the third best walk rate. Oh my God, Kirby! No way, unbelievable. And yeah, maybe I am undervaluing the fact that Kirby could take another step forward somewhere. Actually, he does have another swings elite swing strike around the
fourth. Man, is the market inefficiency, but you're out.
It is. Well, it is the market inefficiency, but not in the top five.
Ah, okay. I see. I get it.
Right.
I'd be hard pressed to put him in that top five that we're talking about. I might have him ahead of Crochet, but That's where I'm starting to talk about things other than talent. Per inning talent, I probably have Crochet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for me, if I'm getting a top five guy, it needs to be, I don't know if I'm actually going to go for floor. I don't know. Probably. But it's like, if a Kirby's ceiling is not going to, we know he's not going to be in the top five at the end of the year. Like, we don't feel like the ceiling is there. He's just not going to get 200 strikeouts. Right? It doesn't feel like that. Feel like he's going to have like a 2-3 ERA season with a one whip and 200 plus strikeouts or something like that.
I think I have.
He's too hittable. Hit per nine has been 8.4 or higher in all 3 years.
That his striker is terrible. The, what was he in 2022 end rank? Ooh, 2023 end rank, ninth.
2023, he was ninth. Yeah.
Okay. Ninth. So ninth and 22nd the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll pick up some of these strings again.
Oh, I'm sure. What? No. For 6 months, we're going to be quiet now, guys. All right. I think that's, you got to run as well. This is a fun podcast. This is one that's going to be a good time to review later on in March. Be like, oh, we're stupid. I can't believe it. But we're going to try and listen to these lessons and keep them close to the chest. We'll be back, of course, throughout the offseason. A little bit different schedule. I'm going to talk to you about when that would work out best. But thank you all so much for our first full year of the craft. It's been really nice having Eno as a guest so frequently. He's been super kind with his time to do this. Eno, what are you working on in the last week of the season?
I've got a piece out today about saying goodbye to the Oakland Coliseum. And,
oh, man.
I did it the only way I know how, which is the fact that I worked my first credentialed day in the Coliseum. And I was a misfit that, you know, had to find my footing. And I found a lot of players along the way that spoke my language, were like me. I kind of refer to them in the piece as player analysts, or as a writer analyst. There's something about that clubhouse. And also, you know, Oakland's biggest currency over the years has been giving people a chance. You know, they have been able to give people 2 months, 3 months, 2 years chance. Yeah. Just look at JJ Bleda. Not good, not good, not good. Oh, we gave you a year and a half and now you're good. That's the currency they had, and that's the currency they gave me. So it was really a cool place to find my footing, and had some of my best interviews there. I'm really going to miss it. On Friday, I'm going to have a piece about league-wide trends and which playoff teams are most ready to embrace them. And that's where, you know, it comes up that the Mets have the most starters with, or the most pitchers with three fastballs in the league. Sometime next week, I'm going to have something about the science of Josh Hader's fastball.
Ooh.
Which will have some soon to come out goodies from Baseball Savant.
Oh my gosh. Oh man.
Including something that rhymes with schmarm schmangle.
Yeah, there it is.
And so I'll showcase some of their new stats and how it pertains to Josh Hader's fastball, which is I'm going to say unique. I think it's a unique fastball.
Well, I can't wait for that Barm Tangle piece to come out. thank you so much for being a part of this, and thank you all for listening the entire year. I'm looking forward to more reviews of this past year and looking forward to 2025 with all of you. But that is it for today. So on behalf of Eno Saris of The Athletic, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching with you next week.